In today's episode,
if you get the flu, you miss work. Google's out some money, so they want to keep you at work. On the other hand, cholesterol and heart disease, cancer and heart disease, these are things that are going to affect you in 30 and 40 years. Google does not want to prevent something that's going to affect you in the future because it's going to cost them money now. And frankly, when you get it, it's the next guy's problem. And so what you realize is we've created an entire healthcare system that's focused on keeping you at work, not keeping you alive.
This episode is sponsored by Just Works. If you're a small business, I'm sure you're looking for an easier way to onboard and manage remote employees. Just Works makes it easier for you to start, run, and grow a business. Let me tell you how Just Works can help your business. Just Works can relieve you of some of the admin work you don't love to do, things like running payroll, managing benefits, and figuring out state-by-state rules and regulations. JustWorks makes it simple to hire and manage remote employees across all 50 states. With JustWorks, you can onboard new employees with ease in an intuitive online platform, take the guesswork out of employment and tax regulations and requirements, access national health insurance plans so your employees can get coverage no matter where they live, get help setting up sick leave policies, and administering harassment and discrimination prevention trainings that comply with state and local requirements. Save hours on time tracking that syncs with payroll, plus access 24/7 expert support as well as certified HR consultants to get answers to your questions whenever you need them. Manage your remote team and run your business with confidence. Find out how JustWorks can help your business by going to justworks.com. That is justworks.com for more info. Now let's get straight back to the show. Welcome to another episode of Creator Lab. We have a very special guest today, Adrian Aoun. Nice to meet you, Adrian. Thanks for being on the show.
Not at all. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So we actually had some overlap at Google. I think we were there at similar times, but we didn't know each other. You were doing some really interesting stuff, which we're going to talk a little bit about today with Sidewalk Labs. You had sold a company, Wavy, before that to Google. I think that's how you got into Google originally. And now you're also the founder of Forward, reinventing healthcare from the ground up. We're going to talk all about that. You guys have raised, I think, $225 million, it sounds like. Is that number still accurate?
We raised a little more than that.
All right, cool.
We're pretty good at burning money around here, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, Crunchbase isn't up to date. It's like Wikipedia of business fundraising news. But yeah, so we're going to talk all about your background and really dig deep into the healthcare system. People who've heard this podcast for a while know it's something I'm really passionate about because it's the one area that I still haven't gotten over how bad it is in the States in terms of how it works for the regular consumer and user, if we can call ourselves that for a healthcare system anyway. So we're going to dig into kind of the structural problems and what you guys are trying to do to improve it. But I wanted to start off actually a little bit before that, because you sold a company, as I said, to Google. It was reported for $30 million. I don't know if that's accurate, but the second thing you did at Google, though, it seems like, was Sidewalk Labs. And this was, when I was in the company, it was kind of the hot thing. And a lot of people were saying, oh, this is like smart cities. How can we apply technology to that world? So could you give us a little overview of what you were working on there? And then we can dig into some of the interesting things in that world.
Yeah, totally. So one of the things that I always ask myself, like when I walk around cities, there's this kind of fascinating thing, which is that cities tend to have all these problems, right? And we all know this, right? We all have our complaints about our cities, whether you're in San Francisco and you're complaining about the crime, whether you're in Los Angeles and you're complaining about the traffic, whether you're in New York and you're complaining about the smell from the fact that there's so much kind of trash on the streets. We all have these kind of issues. And most people, the way that they tackle cities is by saying, I'm going to have my one issue, and this is the issue that I want to solve. Yet what you realize is it's actually really hard to solve these issues. And the reason is because cities tend to not like to change, right? You hear this oftentimes we call it NIMBYism, not in my backyard, right? It's I want all this change, but not for me, right? And so what I realized is, like, in some ways, maybe the most interesting thing to solve is not actually the homelessness, or not actually the crime, not actually the traffic, not actually the smell in the streets, but rather to take a step back and ask yourself, why are cities so bad at solving problems? And now you start to kind of get your brains, the wheels in your brain turning, and you realize that it's not that kind of first problem. It's maybe the first derivative of that problem. And one of the things that really comes down to is that we have a lot of entrenched interests in cities, right? So you start to realize that, like, actually, when I move into my house, I'm almost making a contract with the city, which is like, I've got my neighborhood and I've got my way of living. And all of a sudden, when the city starts to change something, well, that's not kind of what I signed up for, right? So of course I don't want it to change. So now, even though people in the city are trying to change a good thing, whether it's the traffic or the crime, it actually has these externalities that affect each other person that kind of opted into this social contract. So I started to ask myself, well, can we create a city where maybe the entire city opts into a city that is constantly changing? In other words, maybe the insight of a city is not that we're gonna go solve all these problems once and for all tomorrow, but instead that we should create a city almost like we create pieces of software, where every day I'm getting a new version and a new version. And actually what makes technology so powerful is to understand that the rate of innovation going through the roof is what really allows technology to take off. So once you have that key insight, now you say, okay, what would allow a city to work like that? So let me give you a couple examples. One, and some of these might be controversial for folks, but one might be, maybe you're not allowed to own property in the city. Maybe you're only allowed to rent property. And you know what? In every neighborhood, everybody's rent, everybody's lease ends on the same day. So maybe you can have up to a 3-year lease, but you know what? It ends on the same day. So what that means is we can now reimagine that neighborhood every 2 or 3 years. But now you go a step further and you go, yeah, but you know what? Rebuilding neighborhoods is expensive. So now you start to ask yourself, well, what would it look like if I could tear down and recreate buildings, not for hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, but instead for hundreds of thousands of dollars and tens of thousands of dollars? So you ask, well, what do you mean? Like, how would you even do that? So we started asking ourselves some fundamental questions. Why are buildings really expensive? And a building is this really funny construct, which is, what is a building actually doing? And you know, a building, one of the main things that it does, like, what makes a building so sturdy, so structural? Ironically, most of it is not to keep you safe from the rain and stuff like that. It's actually to keep you safe from wind. Believe it or not, most buildings can withstand some wild amounts of wind, like 80 mile an hour, 90 mile an hour winds, because those might come every, you know, 50 or 100 years. But you know what? When it comes, you're going to be really glad that that building can withstand it. So believe it or not, one of the things that we explored is, imagine a city that had an enormous dome over the entire city, like almost something you read in a sci-fi book, like a dome so big that if you're in the city, you can't even see it. It's like literally so high up and transparent that you literally couldn't see it, but it protects the city from the elements. What that would allow you to do is create buildings out of such lightweight materials that, again, every 2 or 3 years, we could just tear down a city and reimagine every single neighborhood. Now imagine that you didn't allow cars in the city. Again, now a city becomes much easier to reconfigure. And so these are the sorts of constructs that we started to imagine. We said, don't think of a city as the end product, almost think of the city as the platform that supports the end products being constantly changed. And as you go down that path, you start to really come out with what I would say are some very interesting solutions that we haven't really explored as a society today. Today, when we want to innovate in cities, mostly what we do is we create new cities. You see this in the Middle East, you see this in Asia. They're building tons of new cities, the smart city of the future, but they're never taking their existing cities and saying, let's truly renovate them. And that, to me, is one of the most interesting problems that you could possibly go after when you consider that the vast majority of humanity lives in the cities we have today.
Very cool, man. Yeah, I never thought of that. And I'm still wrapping my head around the dome example. And just to be specific about that, would that be to, like you said, protect you from the elements like wind, etc.? But what about like weather, like rain? Because
yeah.
I'm English, so this is something I have to think about.
Yeah.
So what about something like that?
So let's dive into how you would technically build this. So let's imagine you wanted to create the world's largest enclosed structure. Let's start with a dome that is that's 1 kilometer in diameter. Okay. The first thing you say is, well, Adrian, I just need to get this thing up there. How am I going to even hold it up? So maybe you don't make a dome out of, I don't know, glass. Glass is really heavy. Maybe you make it out of a very lightweight plastic. So let's go with just an example, a material called ETFE. I don't know if you've heard of ETFE, but if you
No,
remember
what's
the
that?
it's ethylene tetrafluoroethylene. So think of it as it's a lightweight plastic. If you remember when you were in school, your teacher probably wrote on those transparencies, right? When they were projecting, it looks like those transparencies, except it's basically the strength of glass, but it's flexible. But incredibly, it's like Saran wrap, but very fancy Saran wrap. Now, why is this interesting? Well, it's so lightweight that actually, if you think about it, that dome would actually lift itself. You know what I mean? It would lift itself. Well, remember how like hot air rises? Well, cities produce a lot of hot air. It would actually literally just hold itself up. In fact, you'd have to puncture holes in it so that it doesn't just literally rip and float away. So now you ask yourself, okay, well, what happens to, for example, the sun? Well, you can literally just go put solar panels on it, and you can start to collect an enormous amount of energy. So that's really nice. You could, if you think about it, it's a really nice natural rainwater collector, right? So the rain will land on it, it'll kind of come down to the edges and create a really nice basin so you can collect water. Of course, it'll protect you from things like wind. But if you think about it, we now took all the outer layers of a building and we centralize them in one structure that's really damn good at its job, so that the building can really be more about creating the environment that you want, not also trying to protect you from the elements.
Got it. Okay, Matt. Well, you've clearly thought about this. And just so I also wanted to mention, you were director of special projects for the CEO of Google. Was this the same role, or were there two different things?
Yeah, no. So this was the same role. So basically, my story or my path at Google was they acquired a company I had done in the AI space, which is basically kind of deep learning applied to natural language, like teaching computers to read and understand language. Just think of it as the sort of stuff you do with Siri. And then I kind of helped Google build a bunch of the AI division that's now doing really well. But then what happened was our CEO was at the time was Larry Page, who I'm sure you know. And Larry,
I've heard of him. I've heard of him.
as many of us have. And Larry asked me to come work for him. So I spent the next few years kind of helping Larry, honestly, with a bunch of kind of the crazier Google projects. So obviously we created Alphabet, and then I ended up kind of creating Alphabet companies out of these
What
some
was this counted as one of the moonshots? 'Cause, or was that something separate?
Yeah, the moonshots, a lot of them were in kind of Google X, which was kind of
And that
more
was Sergey, right?
Sergey.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was kind of separate than that.
Awesome, man. And so just to kind of tie a bow in that, like, where are we now with, the status of these sort of cities actually existing? Because I know when I was there, even there were a few kind of trials being run in certain maybe smaller cities or something like that. And yeah, like, what do we need to do to actually get to a place where some of these are actually fully functioning with lots of people living in them? I'm just curious if you know anything about that.
So one of the tough parts about being Google these days is that you think of Google as this behemoth that comes with so much capability, so much money, so much technology, so much human power, so much IQ, so many connections. But actually, it turns out that Google is more an impediment to innovation these days than it is a superpower, a supercharger to innovation. Now, what am I saying by that? Well, as an example, after I left Google to start Forward, Sidewalk actually tried to go launch a city up in Canada. And before Sidewalk could finish the press announcement, oh my goodness, every single local entity, institution, activist was like, what? Google wants to do what with my data? And it's like, well, hold on, take it easy. But you get why, right? Everybody's so worried about these very large companies having so much power and so much influence that could you imagine living in a Google city? That honestly, it kind of doesn't sound that great. Like, I'm not going to lie, you know, there's definitely issues with that.
You can say that now you left, right?
I say it while I was there, candidly.
Yeah, no, fair enough, yeah.
There are some reasons why Ford's not an Alphabet company. And I think it actually is really, really hard when to do real innovation when you're that big. And this is one of the reasons why startups exist. Now, Sidewalk, I don't want to speak on their behalf. They've got a bunch of cool innovations that they are doing these days. But it is certainly hard to go at the scale of what we were originally pushed for, and certainly what I had hopefully envisioned.
Got it, man. Yeah, well, that's a great precursor to what we're just about to talk about, because you're talking about essentially regulation and protests and reasons why you can't do things. And I can't think of another industry more fitted towards that than healthcare, especially in the States. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Ford. Could we paint a picture of what Ford is? And yeah, we can start digging into the problems. But what is Ford, if you were explaining it in an elevator pitch?
Yeah. So, first off, I try not to give those elevator pitches anymore. But one of the things that you kind of have to ask yourself is when you kind of look around, right? There's order of about, I don't know, 7.9, 8 billion people on the planet, right? But when you actually look at the kind of care that they have, less than 2 billion of them have access to any form of real healthcare, anything you and I would call a real form of healthcare. So in some way you start asking yourself, like, what the hell happened? And it's actually kind of simple, right? Because if I walked up to you and I said, you know what, Bilal, I want to get doctors to the whole planet. I want to get doctors to the middle of India. I want to get doctors to the middle of Rwanda. I want to get doctors to billions of people. What are you going to say to me? You're going to say, Adrian, where are you going to get all these doctors and who the hell is going to pay for them? But if I walked up to you and I said, Bilal, I want to get smartphones to the whole planet, to the middle of India, the middle of Rwanda, to billions of people, what are you going to say? You're going to say, Adrian, not only do I think it's possible, I think you're a little late to the game, right? I think it's kind of already happening. So what do you intuitively know? Well, you intuitively know that humans don't scale in a way that technology does. Or another way to say it is doctors don't scale in a way that hardware and software does. So at Ford, we only have one key insight that we believe that nobody else believes, which is we believe that healthcare should be a product, not a service. In other words, we just want to take every single thing that doctors and nurses are doing and migrate it over to hardware and software. Because we know that the more that we do, the more that we can scale healthcare out to billions and billions of people. We want to create the first healthcare system that literally scales to planet scale, that scales to a billion people. Now, immediately when you realize that, when you think about that, you're like, what would it look like to have healthcare as a product? It's almost like when Elon sat there and said, I want to build an electric car. It's a simple concept. But then you start looking around and you go, oh, fuck, the entire world was not made for me, right? There's gas stations, not electric stations, gas stations. Shit, I got to build my own gas stations. We're going to call them superchargers. You know what? There's oil mines, not lithium mines. Damn it, I got to build my own mines. Oh, damn it, the factories. I got to build my own factories. And you realize that he has to kind of rebuild the entire system for this new world. And so at Ford, we realized once you realize healthcare should be a product, not a service, you actually have to rebuild the entire healthcare system from the ground up. So you name it, we want to do it. From open heart surgery to delivering babies to oncology to pharma, we want to do it all. We're either the most ambitious or the most arrogant startup you will ever meet in your entire life. I'll let you know. It depends if we succeed or fail, one or the other. I'll get back to you in another 20 years.
Got you, man. All right. I love it. So grand vision. And so we talked about how much money you've raised here, but let's dig into the problem itself, because I think this is difficult to talk about the whole world at once. I love the frame that you said there about scaling like a phone and, you know, like shipping and producing essentially more doctors and nurses, etc., is a much harder scalability problem than putting a phone in someone's hand where they can actually speak to a doctor, and being able to increase the capacity for a doctor essentially is kind of another part of that. So, but let's talk about the US specifically, since we both live here and I think that's what you're currently focused on mainly. So if you were saying like the 80-20, like Pareto's law, right? The 80% of the results are from 20% of actions. In this case, the problem side though, like what is wrong with the US healthcare system? If we were trying to get to the most important part, how would you define those factors? And then maybe we can go through each one and figure out how you're trying to attack them.
Yeah. So let's actually take a few different problems, okay? So the first is, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to reject a subtle premise that you have alluded to no less than 10 times, you foreign snob. You know, I'm kidding. I'm foreign as well, so I get to be a snob with you. But you keep saying in the U.S. healthcare system, and you say it with this elitism of, but I come from a country where we have better healthcare.
Yeah, okay, fair.
I want to challenge this.
Let's do it. Okay?
Because let's look at the healthcare system of the world, not of the US. Let's look at the healthcare system of the world. Okay. Let's start by asking ourselves a really simple question. Let's use an analogy. Okay. I'm going to start with transportation, not healthcare. And I'm going to ask you to go all the way back to the dawn of time, the dawn of humanity, as far back as we can trace, 5,500 years to, I think, the Bronze Age, okay? And let's look at how transportation has developed. So about 5,500 years ago, you and I, we were walking on our own two bare feet. We didn't even have shoes, okay? So we could walk roughly about 5 miles a day, okay? Couldn't go very far, hurt on your feet. Now, we did that for roughly about 1,000 years. And after about 1,000 years, you and I, we got wise and we invented sandals. We did that. And that got us to about 10 miles a day. We did that for another 1,000 years. And then we're like, screw this, we're going to tame horses. Now we got up to about 50 miles a day. Okay. Maybe even 100. Okay. We did that for another 1,000 years. And we said, you know what, we can do better. And we invented river boats, right? Maybe getting up to maybe 200 miles. And then we did that for another few hundred years. And then just in the last 200 years, we started to invent trains, automobiles, planes to get us thousands of miles. And then NASA said, you know what, hold my beer. You know what they said? We're going to the moon, 125,000 miles away. And then Elon said, we're going to Mars, 125 million miles away. So what did I tell you? In 5,500 years, we went from 5 miles to, oh my God, look at this curve at the end. Boom, in the last 200 years, we now are at 125 million miles. Okay.
Exponential growth, yeah?
Exponential, just in the last few hundred years. Okay, now let's look at healthcare. So what was life expectancy back in the Bronze Age, okay? Do you know?
I have no idea, but I'm going to throw a number out and make myself look stupid. How many years ago is the Bronze Age?
500 years.
Okay, I have no idea. I'm just going to throw a number out there, 32.
32. Okay.
And I'm only accounting for the fact there were a lot of infants that died. So maybe the range might be far greater. Like there might have actually been plenty of people living till 65. I have no idea.
So you're doing pretty well. So here's where it is. So you had roughly let's call it 20 to 25% probability of dying at infancy. So that's pretty bad. Let's be real. So you nailed that one. Okay. Now let's pretend you did not. You got through that infant mortality stage. Average life expectancy, 47 years old. Okay. Today, average life expectancy, 72. So in 5,500 years, we went from 47 to 72, 0.5x. In transportation, we went 5 million X. And in healthcare, we went 0.5x. Where's my fucking spaceships, man? Where's my rockets? Right?
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Healthcare is nowhere. You know, and you know this. You know how you know? We just had a global pandemic. And what's the first thing they told you to do? Quick, put a piece of paper in front of your face. Like, are you fucking kidding me? In the year 2022, that's what you're telling me to do? Really? Right? You know this. If one of your best friend in the entire world, the person you love most in the entire world, comes up to you and says, you know what, Bilal? I didn't get a checkup this year. I didn't go to the doctor this year. Do you go, oh my God, Susie, you're going to die? No, you go, I'm not sure it fucking matters. Right? Like, really? Does it matter? No. You said healthcare is better in other countries, really? If you get cancer, do you immediately go, oh, no worries, I'm traveling to the UK and I'm gonna survive? No, we all have the same shit. Like, it all sucks, it's all trash.
If you're running a business, you know your employees can create all kinds of interesting situations, both good and bad. I'm sure you've been there. Somebody isn't showing up on time, you're struggling to attract and retain top talent, or now you're figuring out how to navigate remote work situations. That's why you need to talk to Bambi. With Bambi, you get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 per month. They're available by phone, email, and real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly, team members reach peak performance, and your business stays compliant with changing HR regulations. And with Bambi's HR autopilot, you'll automate important HR practices like setting policies, training, and feedback. Bambi has dedicated HR managers. That's a US-based person dedicated to your business, giving you access to the HR expertise and personal touch you need. HR managers can easily cost $80,000 a year, but Bambi starts at just $99 per month. Schedule your free conversation today to see how much Bambi can take off your plate. Visit bambi.com/lab right now. That is spelled bambee.com/lab. That's bambi.com/lab. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. With spring in the air, it's time for renewal and growth, personally and professionally. As your small business grows, LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find people you want to talk to faster and for free. Here's how to get started. In a few minutes, create a free job post on LinkedIn Jobs and you'll tap into the world's largest professional network. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your profile to spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people. Use simple tools like screening questions to make it easy to focus on candidates with the right skills so you can prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one place in delivering high quality hires versus their competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster, and you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/creator. Again, that's linkedin.com/creator to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Now let's get straight back to the show. So can I just add, just to add context, what I mean by, and I love the frame, and I love the exponential curve you painted, and now I'm like, okay, we're just stagnant, right? What I mean by that is probably an anecdotal thing, but also speaking to people, I think it's more, you feel it more here. So I'll just paint a picture of what I mean by this in terms of, there's so many problems with the NHS and the Canadian healthcare system. So I'm not saying they're perfect by any means, but as someone who is now self-employed, I pay, just to paint a picture for people who aren't from the US, about, it's going to go up to $750 a month for very basic healthcare, where my deductible for the year is $8,000, right? So $750 a month, right? So whatever that is, a year. And that basically doesn't really cover me for too much. It's like, really, in case I get hit by a car or something really bad happens, I want to make sure I don't go bankrupt. And what I mean by that is, in the UK, where I did grow up, and I know you spent a lot of time in Europe as well, I could still go to the hospital for free and not have to have that burden. And now you could break that down and say, actually, you're paying for that in taxes, you're paying it for in other ways. But that's kind of the frame I had. So of course, like, the actual care, if you're rich here, or you can afford good health insurance, so you get it through work, is actually pretty good, right? Like, you, for what we have today anyway. So I just wanted to clarify what I mean by that, to be more specific.
Okay, I love this. So let's break down the problem. So problem one is, I think we've just established healthcare does nothing. It literally does nothing. It's all a farce. And problem number two is, it's a farce that charges us an arm and a fucking leg. It's literally 20% of GDP in this country. I think it's the biggest sham that we have. Literally, it's a scam, right?
That's what I meant, yeah.
20% of GDP. Now, when we say 20% of GDP, that's a really intellectual statement. So let's just make it really visceral. 20% of your fucking paycheck. Somebody is taking 20% of all the money you make and they're handing it to the healthcare system that is doing nothing, literally nothing. That's a problem. That's a huge problem, right? And that's what we need to change. So now you start asking yourself, okay, now that we understand the problems, how do we change it? And you nailed it earlier. And you said, well, there's this exponential thing going on in healthcare. Or sorry, in transportation. And you have to ask yourself, how do I make that same exponential thing go on in healthcare? Now, remember the insight that I gave earlier about cities, right? It's not about figuring out one conclusion. It's not about figuring out one insight. It's about figuring out many insights as fast as you can. Another way to say it is, if you're an investor, what you care about is, you care about how fast can I compound my money, right? We all learn this in school, right? Compound interest, if I can compound it, oh my God, it goes exponential, right? And the problem, the number one problem of healthcare today is that the rate of innovation is shockingly low, insanely low. Think about what you do. You have some insight. I think this would be a great idea. So what do? You pull together a clinical trial. That's, I don't know, a year or two. You get results a year or two later. And then you're like, I found some discovery. So great, I'm going to submit it to a journal. They're going to publish it. That's another year or two. Then every doctor out there is going to hopefully read it. Probably not, but let's pretend. And then they're going to somehow commit it to memory. If you're crushing it 5 years, if you're not 10 or 15, that is our pace of innovation. Now let's think about the pace of innovation in the world of mobile computing. You sit at home, you have an idea, you ship it, you get results tomorrow. Kevin Systrom walks around and says, I built Instagram in a weekend. And it always kind of pisses me off. It's like, sure, you built Instagram in a weekend after 10,000 engineers built the world's best glass, the world's best camera, the world's best operating system, the world's best cell towers. You came, you put icing on the cake. Like, for crying out loud, you built a camera app, you don't know how the camera works. But in some ways, this is why the mobile computing revolution took off. Because a 22-year-old at Stanford could have an idea and push it out to the world and get results literally that day. We need the same thing in healthcare. We need that same platform for innovation in healthcare. In fact, in some ways, the people who should be the most innovative in healthcare are the Kaisers of the world. They're sitting on the healthcare system, but they are not. They are not innovative. They are not changing. Now ask yourself why. And it's because they were never built from day one with this idea of change into how they operate. The same way that we were building Sidewalk with this notion of let's change constantly, that's how we've built Forward. So let me give you an example. The other day, we had an engineer start at Forward, a brand new software engineer. I think it's her first job fresh out of school. And she's kind of sitting at her desk coding away. And all of a sudden she just yelps, she goes, yeah. And everybody looks and goes, oh, what happened? What happened? It's like, I don't know, her like second or third day on the job. And she's like, I just checked in some code and it went live. It went live to all of our clinics. And everyone looks at her and like, yeah, so? And she's like, guys, it just went live. And she's like, that's crazy. I just checked it in. And so we at Forward do something called continuous integration, which is, if you check in your code and it passes tests, we automatically push it out live. And she goes, well, how is that safe? Like, this is a live healthcare system. I just shipped to a live healthcare system. And you see the mentality. The mentality by default is, because it's healthcare, we have to move incredibly slowly. And what we don't realize is by moving slowly, we're actually killing people. This is an insanely bad idea because we are not innovating. We're not learning the best answer as fast as possible. At Forward, we took a different view. We said, actually, it's incredibly important that we learn absolutely as fast as possible. Now, it's important that you learn to do that safely. You can't push crap out into the world. So you have to get really good at shipping and shipping often, but shipping safely. This is not a Facebook move fast and break things. These things are humans. So,
or a worst case scenario where Theranos is the example people think of that went terribly wrong, obviously, in healthcare as well.
Learn and fraud. So
yeah, that's another. I don't want to associate your company with it, but you know what I mean. That's something that to a lot of people, they're like, oh, this is moving quickly, but they didn't know behind the hood. So, but could we go into that example? Because I love that example about the engineer shipping something so quickly, and the frame you've put on this. But let's get specific about what those use cases and uses of technology could actually be. So you mentioned a smartphone, you know, being able to speak to a doctor, but could we go through a few examples of how you're actually using technology to improve it?
I think a smartphone speaking to a doctor is in some ways the least interesting thing you can do, right?
Fair enough.
For some reason, we've decided that telemedicine is like the future. It's like, we just discovered that you can Skype. It's like, we had this in the 80s, guys, like big whoop, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's funny that people say the same with Zoom. And I was like, we've been Skyping for a while, no, I know what you mean. Obviously people use it more than they did.
Yeah.
Right, so over to you, some examples that might blow my mind.
So let's just think about what Forward's doing. And you'll kind of get a sense of how we see the world. So I told you that we want to build healthcare for billions of people. But I also told you that what Ford does today is we build these high-tech doctor's offices, right? We've got them live all across the country in order of about 25 cities now, right? And so you're like, well, Adrian, how are you going to healthcare to billions of people building doctor's offices with doctors in them? That's never going to work. So think about what we're doing. Every day, we're watching everything that happens inside of our locations. So you come, you sit in the exam chair, you talk to your doctor about the flu. And we immediately go, wait a minute, why do you even have to come in and talk to the doctor about the flu? Why didn't you just build that into the mobile app? Next person comes in, they sit in the exam chair, they talk to their doctor about their heart issues. Then we say, great, let's build a body scanner. Next person comes in, they sit in the exam chair, they talk to their doctor about their skin issues. We build a skin scanner. And slowly but surely, what you see we're doing is we're migrating everything the doctors and nurses are doing, and we're migrating it over to hardware and software. Now, there's something really powerful, which is the second that you move it into the world of software and hardware, your rate of innovation starts to go through the roof. Now, I have an actual team whose sole job it is to sit there and be like, I can work on this heart health program. I can literally work on how I can reduce people's blood pressure, and I can just ship day in, day out, new versions. And I become world class at that one problem. And so what you see is like where we're going is at the limit. We don't believe doctor's offices should exist. The limit, we just want the world to be consisted of hardware and software, right? Because once you can do that, now you're in a world where the rate of innovation takes off.
Got you. Yeah, that makes sense. So could we go into a couple of those examples? You said a body scanner. Yeah. The skin scanner, which I've seen you guys do for, I think, cancer prevention and stuff like that. So let's say the body scanner. So what is a body scanner doing that we couldn't do before? And maybe what it might be able to do in the future? Because like you said, it sounds like more like a base layer that other things will be built on top of. So I'm curious, like, because and just to be completely, you know, honest, I think what a lot of, I'm trying to think from a listener's point of view who's skeptical, because a lot of people are in this space, and they're saying, someone's saying, oh, that looks quite cool, like a shiny object, but what does it actually bring to me?
Okay, so let's just kind of take a step back and let's think about the two paths that you could go down. Let's go down the path of healthcare as a service, and let's go down the path of healthcare as a product. Healthcare as a service is you walk into your doctor, you walk into your dermatologist, and your doctor just kind of looks at your skin, right? And says, well, I don't know, that one looks bad and that one looks good. And hopefully they kind of remember what it looked like a year ago. I don't know, like they somehow have an incredibly photographic memory. But that's kind of what you're relying on. And it's not going to change, right? It's not like human mind is going to somehow magically fundamentally change what it can do a year from now and 2 years from now and 5 years from now. Now let's look at healthcare as a product. So day one, we start and we build a little skin scanner. What that skin scanner does is it just takes images of every kind of molar lesion on your body. It allows us to track how is it developing over time. Day two, we now add some machine learning and we say, great, which ones of these moles or lesions are likely to be cancerous, likely to be malignant. Day three, we say, wait a minute, a lot of people are using this product. We should invest more. Why are we stopping at images? What other kinds of sensors can we use to truly understand what's going on? Should we be using infrared? Should we be using ultrasound? Day four, we say, why is the doctor, even the person that's taking this across your skin, why are you not doing it yourself, right? Why can you not just walk into a little pod and just stand still and have your whole skin imaged for you? Day five, we say, now that we've collected data about all of the people in society, we can compare how your moles compare to other people's moles, and we can start to tell you, you know what? These ones are very likely going to develop to be malignant because we've seen millions of these, and we know, even though this one isn't yet, this is the one that you should be worried about. Day six, now we can say, you know what? These are the treatments that have worked well for other people that have been in exactly this circumstance. These people have tried removing these moles. These people actually have tried, I don't know, a topical cream. I'm not a doctor. You're going to forgive me. Day seven. Now you say, great, this is all really fancy, but can we make it cheaper? Oh, yes, we have Moore's Law going in our favor. And so that scanner that started by costing $100,000 quickly costs $10,000, quickly costs $1,000. Wait, now it's literally $100? Day eight, now you ask yourself, why are you even going in to a doctor's office? Why is this scanner not on every street corner? Why is it not just built into the fabric of society and just all around us? Day eight, why is it not in my home? Why am I not just waking up in the morning, walking into the scanner? Day nine, why is the scanner not just built into my closet or my shower? So every day as I'm going about my life, my skin is being checked to tell me if there's any cancerous sign. That is the arc of a product. And again, while that product is developing, what is the human doing? What is the healthcare as a service doing? Well, Bilal, your skin looks good. That's it.
Yeah.
No change. What would you rather have? Would you rather have one person kind of do the little once over in 5 seconds? Or would you rather have a team of the world's best doctors working with the world's best engineers with billions of dollars of funding and AI and sensors all coming together to nail that one product? I don't know about you. I'd rather have the latter.
That's a great example. Okay.
So now you have to ask yourself, how can we enable that to occur times 100, times 1,000, times 1,000,000? Because that's just one of the issues of healthcare. We all know we can give a million more. And not all of them are illness. Some of them are wellness. We love in healthcare to think about the downside. We talk about the cancers. We talk about the heart disease. But why do we never talk about upside? Why do we never talk about making people greater, right? Why do we never talk about helping you run that marathon faster or be more present or be the person you truly want to be? You know why we don't? Easy. When healthcare is so limited, when you get your 5 minutes a year with a doctor, all we can do is just focus on the things that are truly the most acute. You've got a stomach ache, that's what I'm going to deal with. But when you turn healthcare into a product, when healthcare can be something that we access not once a year, but once a day, or even once an hour, when healthcare is just ubiquitous, now you start to think about it really differently, right? What would it look like if the world's best doctor was not just saying, hey, here's how to lower your cholesterol, but the world's best doctor helped you achieve happiness? That sounds crazy. You're like, what do you mean? I don't need a doctor to achieve happiness. Really? I'll tell you, I have my happiest times when I'm working out on my bicycle and I'm in the mountains in nature. That's some of my happiest moments, right? That's a physiological response, right? My dopamine's running, I'm being active, right? I have coaches that can help me with that. Isn't it kind of weird that we take the people who understand my body and understand how I operate the best, and we remove them from any sort of upside, we only keep them on downside? This is the world that we need to create. We're early in getting there, but it's totally possible. We just need to dream a little more.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that grand vision. So could I go into the scan example? Because I know I've heard Chamath on the All In pod, and I don't know if you've listened to that podcast, or I'm sure you know those guys. They've talked about, I forgot the name of the company. I had it saved in my notes app somewhere. There's a company on the West Coast that they had kind of mentioned that they had got scanned, and it was for preventative health, and it was something along the lines of, mentioned it in a bunch of, what, say that again?
For Nuvo, maybe?
That's the one, yeah. And so I don't know much about that company.
Them and me are an investor in it, so full
disclosure. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool, yeah, yeah. And so I'm curious, could you just share, since you know them, did you say you're an investor in them as well?
Yeah, I am.
Cool, so what do they do, actually, just for people who've never heard of them?
I am an investor in them. I really don't want to speak out of turn, lest Andrew Lacy calls me and yells at me. So I'm really not going to go that far. But I will tell you, you can check them out, prenuvo.com. But
okay, cool.
There's a few different companies out there. QBio is another good friend of mine. And what they're trying to do is basically say, can we take scans that today we do not do preventatively, that we do reactively, whether these are things like MRIs or CTs, acknowledging that CTs are incredibly radiative and should probably not do them regularly. But can we take, in essence, let's call it an MRI, and can you reduce cost and also just make them so accessible that people are doing these things preventatively? Can we truly understand what's occurring with your body? I think this is fantastic. I think this is absolutely wonderful. I would love, as these technologies mature, to integrate these technologies into
yeah, that's the question I had was how, because right now it seems like, you know, there's this curve that we talked about, and we talked about the vision, which I agree with, and I love the grand vision. And I guess the question is like, what are the steps to get us closer to that? And you talked about Moore's law, and you know, the cost of things coming down. But for the time we have left, I'd love to go into kind of like what is stopping that from happening in a way. And I know it's multifactorial, I'm sure, but just again, like it seems like there are incumbents who don't necessarily want things to change because they are, you know, multi-billion dollar healthcare companies and insurance companies. Again, this is an amateur's take. I don't know actually if this is true, but or maybe they're just not dreaming big enough, like the way you explain.
Well, I always encourage people to follow the dollars, right? Any company will roughly revert to its incentives as it scales, right? And so at some point, you just need to understand, like, what's the business model? So, you know, Amazon recently bought One Medical. And, you know, I actually had the idea to buy One Medical when I was at Alphabet. So I went and I grabbed Tom Lee, the founder, for lunch. He was still there. He was still running the place. And I said, okay, Tom, let's just go ahead and let's just buy you. Like, imagine we gave you $1 billion of spending money. Like, what would you do with it? Like, tell me how you would, like, you know, invest in technology to just like change healthcare, every part of it. And I remember he said a line to me. He said, you know what, Adrian? In healthcare, technology investment is not ROI positive. It's seared in my brain, word for word, what he said. And I have sat there thinking, are you fucking kidding me right now? What do you mean it's not ROI positive? In gardening, it's ROI positive. Like, how the fuck is he saying this? It's a crazy statement. Yeah. But think about what he was actually saying. It's a really insightful comment. What he was saying is, actually, when I invest in technology, my business does not make more money. Well, whoa. That's weird. Let's ask why. So we talked about a body scanner. So you have to ask yourself, why does One Medical not have a body scanner? Well, One Medical today, when you walk in, one of the things that they do is they have a nurse or a medical assistant kind of take your vitals. And because of that, they have a billing code. They bill your insurance. Now let's pretend they built a body scanner and the body scanner replaced that medical assistant or replaced that nurse. You realize by building that body scanner, they would make less money. They wouldn't be able to bill for that procedure. So you realize doing the right thing for the consumer makes you less money in the world of healthcare.
That's the incentive there, right? As you mentioned.
Correct. And so all of a sudden you go, what the fuck? Now, okay, now let's take even a further step back. Remember how I like kind of my first derivative and second derivative? Okay, well, let's go to the second derivative and be like, well, why? Why do we set up a system like this? Why? This sounds crazy. Like, of course we want the system to do the right thing. So why do we set up a system like this? And so you got to kind of ask yourself, like, who's paying for healthcare? And you realize, like, at its core, like, the employer is paying for healthcare. So why does this matter? Well, the average tenure of an employee with an employer in the US, a few years. 2, maybe even 3 years. So let's go ahead and look at how the healthcare system operates. Well, when you were at Google, every year Google would come up to us, I remember this vividly, be like, you know what, blah, time to get your flu shot. They're all these flu drives every year. Well, how many people do you know who are dying of the flu?
Not that many.
Yeah, zero. Let's be real. How many people do you know are dying of heart disease or cancer?
Lots of people.
Okay. Did Google ever walk up to you and say, well, let's talk about your cholesterol. Let's talk about your blood pressure. No.
No, yeah.
Why? Well, what you realize is if you get the flu, you miss work. Google's out some money. So they want to keep you at work. On the other hand, cholesterol and heart disease, cancer and heart disease, these are things that are going to affect you in 30 and 40 years. Google does not want to prevent something that's going to affect you in the future because it's going to cost them money now. And frankly, when you get it, it's the next guy's problem. And so what you realize is we've created an entire healthcare system that's focused on keeping you at work, not keeping you alive. Think of how terrible that is.
Yeah, that's sad. Well, and that's a great question, great point that brings up a question which kind of relates to what we talked about, the European approach or my anecdotal experience of the British healthcare system is you said healthcare here is pretty much paid for by the employer, whereas mm-hmm. let's say in the UK, to be specific, is paid for by the National Health Service, which is paid mm-hmm. for by our taxes. And so you would argue for both of you and I are fans of innovation and entrepreneurship and business, but there are a few areas where I would say, okay, profit should not be the objective here. That long-term well-being, the ability to have a thriving, group of people that are in your country should be the incentive. But then there's also limitations there because most politicians are working on 4-year time scales as well, similar to the problem you just mentioned before. So I guess the question is, where's the soul for either of these two things? Is it just making it private and making people pay directly the way you guys are kind of proposing?
Yeah. So I don't think private is going to cover everything, but I think it might cover a lot more than you imagine. So imagine you and I 20 years ago were chilling at our public library and you and I were just sitting there and we're like, man, we like books. We think books are awesome. And you know what? We're good people. So we say, we think everybody should have books. We think books are great. So you and I start talking about universal libraries and passing, laws where governments are going to pay for everybody to have libraries and it's going to cost a lot, but whatever, we're going to do it. That's one strategy. But in the corner, there's these two guys named Larry and Sergey that are looking at us like a bunch of fucking idiots going, guys, we're just going to build Google. We're just going to make libraries free for everyone. And you know how? We're going to take it and make it a technology problem. Because once we do, it will scale so damn well. It'll be dirt cheap. So the thing that I ask you is, healthcare today is wildly expensive, but it doesn't need to be. Healthcare as a product could cost pennies on the dollar, literally pennies. Because at its core, hardware and software is not actually expensive. What are we paying for today? We're paying for crazy amounts of labor. And the big issue is not actually that we're employing doctors. We should employ more doctors. The big issue is that those doctors affect people one at a time. When a doctor sits down to work, they literally affect the person in front of them and nobody else. When I was at Google, I worked on the search engine, right? I could write code that went out to 3 billion people later that day. What? Why? What's the difference? Why is it that I get to affect 3 billion and a doctor gets to affect one? Is it because I'm more altruistic? No. Because I'm more intelligent? No. It's because of one thing and one thing only. My tools are better. When I sit down to work, I sit down at a laptop, which is like the sum culmination of all human advancement in a beautiful 2-pound device. When a doctor sits down to work, they start by pulling out a fucking stethoscope, a hollow tube invented in 1800. This is crazy. If we build doctors amazing tools, doctors will affect billions of people and the cost of healthcare will plummet. That's the world we need to create.
Got it. Love it, man. Well, yeah, I'm rooting for you guys to be able to solve some of those problems. I know we've only got a few minutes left. Just the last kind of question I have to round us out is if we look at, you talked about scanners, You know, I know you guys do blood testing on site as well in a very rapid fashion. There's wearables world. You know, I can't tell. Is that an Oura Ring or something like that on your?
I've got an Oura Ring and I've got an Apple Watch. Both.
Me too. Yeah, I have them all as well, and I've got the CGM in my arm, which we've had levels on the show as well.
That's awesome.
So I'm most of these things, you know, they're not like my Oura Ring, for example. I don't have to have an Oura Ring. It just helps me. I like seeing the data personally. And I think if I was showing that to a doctor, I think that's worth them seeing as well. Similar with the CGM. And if you're listening to this, you don't know what I'm talking about, go back to the episode we did with the founder of Levels. And just for me to be able to make that more personalized and see, I ate this food, this is how I reacted to it, based on glucose anyway. So I'm curious, like, you must see a lot of interesting stuff with your team and what you guys are trying to create. What are the kind of wildest ideas you're seeing in using some of these technologies? I know you talked about a few earlier, but are there any others that might be worth leaving our listeners with?
So one of the things that I ask people to think about is what would you build once you're living in the world of healthcare as a product? So let me give you an example. Today, the world of finance went from I had a banker to I don't have a banker anymore. There's not a local guy I know who's my banker, right? Today I have health, finance as a product, right? I use Vanguard or E-Trade or Bank of America. And because of that, finance is all around us. I walk into a restaurant and I can personalize it with my credit card. I go to any website on the internet, I can add to my credit card. I literally have bank accounts just running in the background right now in the cloud, doing like, you know, automatic trading and collecting interest and all this shit. It's like literally my digital financial profile is just running. Well, where is my digital healthcare profile? Why is there not an AI-driven digital version of Bilal that's like sitting there in the cloud, just watching all the research, watching all the updates, saying, oh, here's a new med, I'm gonna take it and I'm gonna run it on my digital profile and see, like, let's simulate it. Did it help? Did it not help? If so, let's go ahead and start putting Bilal on it. We don't yet live in this world, but that's the world that we need to go create. And to me, that's the world that's super exciting.
Got it, man. Yeah, love it, man. Well, listen, man, I know we're hitting time and I don't want to get you late to your next meeting, but I really appreciate you coming on. Where can people go to check out you and what you guys are working on?
GoForward.com.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And when you're in New York, let me know. We'll have to do this in person as well.
I would love to.
All right, cheers. Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can also watch all of these visually, plus bonus clips on youtube.com/creatorlabfm. If you enjoyed the show, let me know what you think. You can say hello to me on Twitter. I'm at bzaidi, B-Z-A-I-D-I, or creatorlabfm on any other channel. I really appreciate it. Helps spreading the word with your friends and colleagues. It helps to get this out to more people and allows me to get better guests for you guys. And lastly, if you want access to exclusive content and free giveaways like the recent books that we gave out, make sure you're subscribed to the email list. I'll send out an occasional email with lessons learned from the episode. So if you're interested in that, and of course the free giveaways, who doesn't like those, go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. Until then, I'll see you on Twitter and speak to you next week.